Chapter 5. Rouge. Farming was boring. Not that Rouge could say that, because that was like Aspen's thing now. Though how someone as cool as he had been could just up and decide to go live out in the middle of nowhere, literally, and become boring, she didn't know. He was a duke. He should have a castle or something. Admittedly, there were all those attempts to kill him, so that was a thing. Maybe if someone was trying to kill her, she'd have run away too. Plus the thing with his daughter. That was sad. Even for a game, that was dark stuff. She'd put some serious effort into being extra nice to him for a while after all that came out, but there was only so much a girl could take. Farming was boring. In the last week, they had plowed and planted four gigantic fields. With food storage, if the spring crops grew as quickly and plentifully as Aspen's crops grew in the fall, that would produce enough food to feed everyone in Bright for a year. Aspen had been busy planting seeds with a little tool he made that poked a hole into the ground and then dropped the seed in when he turned a knob. This was where Rouge came in, because it was her job to pat the dirt back down, then use water from her inventory to moisten it. Just moisten, not wet. She hated the word moist. The first saving grace was that on the second day, she figured out how to make her zombie do this task, even though the set of instructions she had to use was pretty complex. She'd known there was an advanced settings tab in the Away user interface, but she'd never used it before. Now she could program if-then instructions, and that helped a ton. The second saving grace was the study room. Dr. Joe had a huge list of things he wanted to research about how immersion affected people, and not all of them were directly game-related. Normally, when you logged in, the game dropped you into your avatar, wherever it happened to be. When you logged out, you went back to your body in the real world. In fact, you were always at least vaguely conscious of your real body, even in the best pod on the market. Apparently, Dr. Joe wanted to see if he could erase that last lingering awareness of the physical body, without having to actually put people into long-term immersion. In order to study this, and the effect it had on the brain while performing everyday functions, Dr. Joe had created a kind of halfway location. Zoe suspected it was the same place you saw when you first logged in, and where you created your character. Emily, the AL, automated learning program that served as the UI for character creation, was even there. Now, when Zoe logged in from the pod at work, she could choose whether to return to her zombie or go to the study room. When there was farm work to be done, she usually opted for the study room. Because duh. In the study room, she had access to literally everything in the public part of the Library of Congress, as well as the actual internet. She didn't have to log out, get out of the pod, and get her screen to check something. Some people, of course, had implants in their eyes, jawbone, and hands to allow them to interface with the World Wide Web anytime they weren't actually playing Veritas, but even if they weren't astronomically expensive, her dad was way against implants. What was the downside to the study room? Well, there were two. First, of course, were the tests. She had assigned reading and activities, and then when she logged out, she was tested on what she did. Sometimes she had to answer essay questions. It sucked. Second was, "What are you doing, Rouge?" "Yep. Emily." Rouge looked up from the book she was reading. This time it was Beowulf, which was on her optional summer reading list for school. She scowled at the bland, pretty face in front of her. "What does it look like I'm doing?" She couldn't help being cranky. Emily was always trying to talk to her. No matter what she was doing, the automated learning program interface, ALPI, was there asking questions. Usually the same one she'd asked this time. Emily herself, of course, never showed emotion, except in a very programmed way. If you smiled, she smiled back. If you got mad, she'd apologize, look sad and, "I'm sorry, Rouge. Did I offend you? Is there anything I can do to help?" Rouge sighed and leaned forward until her face landed in her book with a smack. She could even feel the dry paper against her skin, the pinch of the center crease against her nose, and smell freshly printed paper and ink. She was pretty sure there would be a drool spot on the page when she raised her face. Seriously, though. She'd never considered how annoying NPCs would find it to be asked that question over and over and over and over. That is, if NPCs felt anything, which of course they didn't, because they were programs. Still, they acted so real. All except, well, this one. Why the program designers had decided to make Emily so fake was a question to which she still hadn't gotten a satisfactory answer. Something about user feedback in the initial testing, and how people kept becoming overly attached to her. Whatever. Becoming attached to her definitely wasn't an issue anymore. She rolled her face so that one eye could see up, looking at Emily's expression of false concern. "No, thank you, Emily. I'm just reading." Emily nodded. "It's just that your heart rate had slowed, and you were close to entering true unconsciousness. I wanted to make sure you weren't feeling unwell." The elf girl sat up in her simulated chair at her simulated desk. She felt more comfortable as Rouge when she was in the study room, even though they had made a Zoe avatar for her. It was just too real, and it got creepy. Being Rouge reminded her it was still the game. "I was falling asleep. I mean, as close as you can get in game anyway. Working my way through this is hard, and something about being in here just makes me sleepy. Not enough stimulation, I guess." She scrubbed her palm over her face, closing eyes that felt tired and hot, even though they were really closed back in the pod. Thinking about this not being real actually made her feel really weird. Like floaty. Dr. Joe had looked concerned when she told him that, so now when it happened, she kept it to herself, even though she was pretty sure that was exactly the kind of thing he wanted to know. Emily smiled brightly. "I see. Would it help if we changed the environment? I can adjust it to anything within my databases, and I do have a wide range of available." "No." Rouge was vehement. The first time Emily had offered this, she'd taken her up on it with great enthusiasm. The Alpi was right, though. She really could create anything, and the range was too wide and too realistic. There was just something eerie about being able to change every aspect of her surroundings. Almost godlike. Rouge felt increasingly disconnected the more they altered her surroundings, and had to log out in order to feel like she was back in her own skin. "Thanks, Emily. I like this room the way it is. The book is just hard. I mean, the story is okay, but all the Hrothgars and Herats are confusing." Rouge closed the slim volume on the desk in front of her. Emily cocked her head, looking at the book. "Hrothgar is the king, and Herat is the location. I'm not sure I understand the difficulty. They're not words I know, and then you add in all the alliteration. You know, all the words start with the same sound, it seems like, and they—" Rouge trailed off and waved her hand, unsure how to explain her meat brain to a digital brain. Just then, a quiet alarm went off. Emily said, "Your game avatar has completed its task. Aspen is making his final preparations. You wanted to be notified." Rouge jumped up, shrieking, "Yes. Send me in, Emily." Emily nodded, and the study room dropped away. Rouge's zombie was standing near Aspen, not far outside of the fruit tree grove. The tall man was holding something in his hand. His head was bowed and his eyes were closed. Looking around, Rouge saw that they weren't alone. Everybody was here except Mott and William, and they all stared at Aspen with subdued excitement. Aspen finally looked up, his expression nervous. "The quest says to plant it after the last frost in the spring. We haven't had a frost in more than a week, sheltered as we are by the mountains, but I still don't know. Should I take it with me and plant it on the way?" "You probably can't leave it behind, and how would you carry a potted plant exactly? What if something happened to it? What if it got too large for you to carry?" Sumi's tone was acerbic, but Rouge thought she sounded nervous too. "Will we know right away if it worked?" Silas's voice was soft and concerned. "Gina would know if there's going to be another frost, right? So if the quest is going to fail, it should happen as soon as he plants it?" Cor pawed at the earth. "Just do it. There's no other choice, so just do what you have to." Sarave looked at each one as they spoke, and her expression was conflicted. "I know this quest began before you met me, so I do not know what you would lose if you fail, but it seems too much of a risk. Cannot you ask the goddess again? Perhaps she'll answer if we give her a better offering. Aspen shook his head. No, if she hasn't answered, she's not going to. She told me Virak is fairly strict, and she couldn't help me too much. I'm guessing this is one of those things I have to decide and fail or succeed on my own. Rouge raised her hand, feeling left out. I'm sorry, but what quest? I know you guys all know, but could you fill in the new kid, please? Aspen quirked a smile, rubbing the back of his neck as he did when he was worried or thinking. I got a quest from Gina back in the fall. She gave me a special seed, but I'm supposed to plant the seed after the last frost in the spring. The question is, if I do it now and there's another frost, will I fail the quest? If we were south of the mountains, I'd wait another 2 weeks at least. But he shrugged, even there, we sometimes get frost after this point and sometimes we don't. She tugged at a curl, twisting it around her finger as she chewed her lower lip. I dunno. The winter events are all over, and the last patch note said something about a spring triathlon event coming up in Bright, so you're probably safe. Is it a big quest? The others exchanged confused glances before Aspen shrugged again. Pretty big, he admitted. Flip a coin, she suggested. His eyes widened. What? Sure. You know what they say, the gods don't need luck. They invented it. Maybe you just need to give it a chance. She crossed her fingers and mentally sent a message to Gina Bridget, to take a hint. One eyebrow rose and Aspen gave a half grin. I suppose it's as good an idea as any. He scratched his jaw. Ah, do you have a coin? I don't exactly carry a lot of money out here. Rouge rolled her eyes so hard she thought they'd get stuck that way, but pulled a single gold out of her inventory and handed it to the farmer. I want it back. She narrowed her eyes at him. He just grinned, resting the coin on the back of his thumb. Heads, I plant it. Tails, I wait and try to figure something out in a few weeks while we're on the road. His thumb pushed the coin up into the air, where it spun, sparkling gold. Rouge jumped up, somersaulting in midair, and shot out a hand to catch the coin, slapping it down on the back of her hand as she landed. It shone bright against her caramel skin. Heads, she said. Aspen drew in a deep breath, then let it out, closing his eyes. He let the breath out in a long exhalation, and nodded. Without a word, he swung toward a mound of freshly turned earth. He clutched the seed in his hand, and then pushed it down into the sun-warmed earth with his thumb. He held that pose for a moment, and Rouge had to suppress an urge to call him Little Jack Horner. She sensed this was a serious moment, though, and bit her lip. Aspen pulled back his hand, patted the soil over the seed, and stood up. A moment later, he was surrounded by a golden light so intense that she had to shield her eyes. Between her fingers, she could see that everyone else was doing the same. Juniper, who had been playing with the unicorns nearby, began to cry, and Sarave turned to find her daughter, blinking her own light-sensitive eyes as they streamed. The light lasted 1 second, then two, and then it ended as abruptly as it had begun. When she finally managed to focus her gaze on Aspen, she blinked in astonishment. He'd been in pretty good shape before, but he was solid muscle now. He looked really healthy for the first time since she'd met him, and she downgraded her estimate of his age by several years, guessing he probably wasn't actually much older than her dad and might even be the same age. His eyes were bright beneath the brim of his hat. His jaw was firm, and he had that cool square jawline shadow that all the super hot guys seem to have. The creases around his mouth and eyes, which she realized now probably came from pain and illness as much as age, were significantly reduced, though not gone. His nose was still a little too big, though. Oh my gosh! You're actually good looking. She clapped her hand over her mouth, feeling her face burn as she realized she'd said that out loud. He laughed, his cheeks and ears reddening. Ah, thanks. I think. He tugged his hat down over his face, a smile still tugging at his lips. I got the quest completion notification if you hadn't guessed. I got a new quest though. His eyes flicked up and he read out loud. Quest, nice to meta you begun. You have planted the seed of the meta tree. This tree has never before grown outside of Gina's garden. Predators will be attracted to the power of the tree as it grows, though other creatures may come to defend it when they sense its sacred nature. Protect the tree until the fruit ripens. This tree will grow with magical speed and fruit will be ripe in 2 months. You must eat the first fruit in order to complete the quest. Success, a blessing of Gina. Failure, the tree will die and Gina will be displeased. -25 reputation with the goddess Gina and her faithful. Core, who would be remaining behind when most of the others left for Bright, and so would have the unenviable task of defending this tree until they got back, groaned and shook his horns. "Damn it," he said. "Why did the goat always get the last word?"